Hello. In this audio snippet, we will try to continue talking about Black America in the post-Civil War period. But before that, we would like to mention two things that happened this week. One happened towards the beginning of the week, shall we say, and the last thing happened recently, and both things are statements by two different people that are somehow kind of interconnected in a very ironic and strange way. One is Damar Hamlin, the American football player, the black 24-year-old young man who collapsed in the middle of, or at the start, I think, of a very important football game that was being televised, and that drew attention from everybody across the country. And the other statement came from Mike McCarthy, the person who became Speaker of the House after a very tedious and controversial election process in the House of Representatives, where they had to vote like, I forget how many times, I think 11 times, until they finally voted him in as Speaker of the House. And his collapse and the controversy of with McCarthy and his election as Speaker, both things happened around a similar time, and we actually spoke of them at the same time, if we're not mistaken, in a recent audio snippet that we called the Hamlin Tamers. So they are interconnected. These two people came to the spotlight at a very similar time. And interestingly, they both made very interesting statements this week. And I believe that's not a coincidence. The statement that Hamlin made was, I think it was a video recording, or yes, it was a video recording, if I'm not mistaken, that he posted in his social media, and it was to kind of end rumors that he had died, because what happened was that after a brief photo that was taken of him with his family, where he was wearing the stupid mask, and his parents were wearing the stupid mask, and they were wearing this Love Damar t-shirts. After that, apparently he kind of went out of view, and people were wondering, well, we've never really seen him without a mask or without a hood or a hoodie or without wearing, dark glasses. So we really don't know if the few photos of him since the incident are really of him, or if he actually died, or they're covering up his disappearance or whatever. So he made a video without wearing the stupid mask, without wearing glasses or a hoodie. And in the statement was kind of peculiar, because he clearly was trying to tell people, I'm alive and I'm here. And he was saying that he was relatively fine, but that he had not spoken because he was trying to process everything that had happened. He really wasn't quite clear, why things had happened. And in that statement, he kind of briefly gave his interpretation of the why of what had happened, and basically he said he thanked everybody for all their support and all their love and blah blah blah, and then he said and I believe that and I'm paraphrasing, but more or less this is almost literally what he said: I believe that God allowed this to happen so that to highlight my passion and love for kids and the work that I'm doing and to raise, basically, I don't think he used that term, but that's basically what he was going for, to raise awareness about what needs to be done to help the kids and blah, blah, blah. And when I read that, I was so disappointed, but I guess disappointment can only happen when you have an expectation and then the expectation falls short in reality. I wasn't expecting anything from this guy, as we've explained before. But even so, it still disappoints. I don't know why, but it disappoints because this guy is supposed to, he claims to be a Christian, a follower of his God and all this and all that. And you would think that after what happened, which was almost miraculous, he was on the field for 9 minutes and they were trying to revive him. So he must have been brain dead or something, because he was a goner, basically. And a lot of people were fearful that he was going to be severely brain damaged or actually, you know, die in hospital. And it was almost kind of surprising that he just bounced back. And he's still apparently not doing too well. But the thing is that considering that he was almost dead or virtually brain dead for a while, the fact that he's where he is now is stunning. And you know, millions of people rallied around to pray for him, and you would think that in the midst of that, that would have strengthened his awareness of his God, and that the words that would be oozing out of his mouth would be gratitude to him, and that the video would, instead of starting with this gratitude towards everybody who prayed for him and the love. I don't know if he mentioned the word prayer when referring to other people, but he was kind of thanking everybody for their support and their love. And maybe he said prayers, I don't remember. So he started with that and then kind of makes a passing comment. I think God allowed this so that to highlight my passion for kids, helping kids and this and that, the other. You know, the social work that he does. You would have thought that he would start not with thanking people, but with thanking his God for miraculously bringing him back from the dead. And then, you know, obviously thanked the people who supported him and all that. There's nothing wrong with that. But the order of things, and then the fact that he didn't even thank, in that video, he didn't really even bother to thank God. He just said, I think God allowed this to allowed me to go through this to highlight my passion. And that's the word that he said, and that was the literal word, my passion and love for kids. And that was the first word that came out of his mouth in that span, my passion and love. He didn't even say my love and passion, he said my passion and love. For kids and you know, and the stupid social work that he does, so he didn't really bother to, he really didn't thank his God in that video, and so it just makes, like, if you're not a Christian, then you're not you're not going to be thanking God more than likely, because you are living without an awareness or interest in him. So if you don't thank God after that, well, I guess, you know, I don't know whether it can be good or bad. That's another debate. But the thing is that you can understand the person not thanking God because he does not believe in him. But if you believe in him and claim to believe in him, you would think that consistency would then lead you naturally to be grateful for this miracle that happened in his life. There clearly wasn't the gratitude to his God. There was the gratitude to people. And that's the thing, that he is more interested in pleasing people than pleasing his God. His God, yes, I'm sure he does believe in his God and his religion and all that, but it's all at a very kind of low and superficial level. But the social work and pleasing others and looking like he is out there working in the collective to help the collective is more important to him. And that has to do with the personality that we have mentioned before, the server personality, that is very naturally inclined to please others. And there's nothing inherently wrong with that. You know, the server, like a person at a restaurant, for example, who serves, the waiter and all that, the nature of their work is conducive to wanting to please the customer. They want the customer to feel okay or satisfied with the service being provided. So there's this natural tendency to go to try to please others. The problem is when that server personality becomes dominant and distorted, then it creates this distortion of the person where pleasing others and being pleased becomes much more important than the truth. So truth becomes secondary, and if truth gets in the way of pleasing others or being pleased, then truth is thrown by the wayside, and that's why people who are server or are influenced by this distorted server personality, which either have the server personality distorted or live under the influence and accept that influence of a distorted server personality in their lives, these people then become very hateful of another personality, which we have described, the judge personality. As we said, there's five basic personality components that we are born with. We can have one or more of those: judge, visionary, conqueror, server, or organizer. And the judge personality is the one that starts getting into big conflict with the server personality. The judge personality is the one that's always judging and saying, this is right, this is wrong, this is true, this is false. And that all usually gets in the way of the server when he or she gets distorted. And they become very antagonistic towards judgments, towards declarations of right and wrong, because to them, that creates displeasure. The judgment, this is wrong, or this is not true, that creates a displeasure of in the people who believe those false things to be true. And therefore, the server becomes very antagonistic towards these sorts of things. So that's clearly what he has, a server personality. He wants to serve, he wants to please people. And that becomes more important than the truth. And that's why, to him, his God's healing of him, this all about, you know, supernatural healing of him. If you believe in God, then you will say that's a supernatural healing. Then that supernatural healing takes second place. And in fact, when he thinks about his God, he always thinks of it in the context of his service. And that's why it's not his God telling him, go and do this. It is him wanting to do it and then attaching God to it. If you see what I'm saying, it's not a person who is sitting in front of his God and asking, my Lord, my God, what am I going to do? What do you want me to do? Where are you taking me? What do you want me to say or do? No, it's him listening to the people and saying, what do they like to see? And then when he gets the message from the people, then he tries to translate it into a Christian language, and then he carries it out. So then he can please the people and then please that little part of his conscience that wants to be to please God, but you know please him enough to calm his conscience, and while at the same time becoming popular and pleasing to people. And that's the type of personality this poor guy has. So that is very sad that he didn't really even bother to thank his God. And then he said that God allowed this to highlight his passion. And that's a very important thing. That's a very important code word. When you hear the word passion, it's not necessarily a bad word. Please don't get me wrong. it's not that passion, the word passion is inherently evil. Please don't take it that way. But usually, if you're attentive to what people are saying and try to perceive, you know, what is behind what they're saying, usually the word passion will be, I've found it to be a very kind of strong keyword or code word that kind of evidences that the person is entrapped in a distorted server personality. I don't know why the people who are trapped in this matriarchal, because the server and organizer personalities are feminine in their nature, and it has nothing to do with the person being male or female physically, but the personalities, the personality traits of the server and the organizer are feminine by nature. For example, that's why most of the professions that are server related are occupied often by women, more by women than by men. For example, nurses have to have the server personality. They're there to serve and attend to the patients and make sure that they're comfortable, that they're okay, that they have no pain. That's very important. The server is the type of person who tries to, and it's interesting, we're talking about nurses and an ambulance goes by, but what a coincidence. But the thing is that the server is always trying, because he's trying to please the person, he's always trying to prevent pain. And that's why they start hating the judge personality, because the judge personality brings pain. The judgment brings pain by saying, you did this wrong. This was false. What you're believing is false. And so judgments can become painful, and the server becomes very protective of people and is always trying to protect them from pain. So that's why nurses are nurses need to have a server personality. And as you know, most nurses, not all of them, but most of them tend to be women. Same thing with waiters. When you think of the waiter or server role, you generally think of women. I know men are waiters a lot too, but there's something about there's a feminine quality to it. It doesn't mean that you have to. It's not an insult or some sort of comment about men who work as waiters. Please don't get me wrong, but there's a certain feminine quality to it. You have to have this desire to please and to kind of surrender to other people's desires. If you get what I'm saying, like, you know, the customer wants water, so okay, so you go get the water for the person. The customer wants a pillow under their back, then you go get the pillow, that sort of thing. And the thing is that when the server gets distorted, then they become subject to low passions. It's like they surrender to low passions, because they're constantly surrendering to please others in a way, to please the desires of others. So they become prone to low passions. That's why the server personality is the one that is most conducive to addictions. Drug addictions and other sorts of addictions come through that server personality, or that's kind of the main promoter of that, in a sense. That's why to servers or people who are trapped in a server environment, and I call that a matriarchal environment, because basic problem with humanity, and this may sound silly, but it would take a long time to explain in fuller detail, but even though it sounds silly, just hear me out and don't laugh it off. But the basic problem with humanity from the beginning has been that the server personality has become the dominant personality of humanity, and it tries to subdue the other four. The organizer personality, which is also female, kind of goes along with the server personality. They start working as a team, but in a negative way. And that's what the organizer personality, when it becomes distorted, becomes bureaucratic, it becomes very mechanical, it becomes very And that's what leads to the dry and false and old religions that are full of traditionalism and all these things. The organizer kind of institutes that to organize while the server rises up to be the queen of the place. I know this sounds very weird, but in a sense, that is the basic pattern that has led to all the problems that humanity has. The server personality takes over and uses the organizer to organize, because the server cannot organize. Where the server rules and only the server is present, there's chaos, because there are no longer rules, there are no longer boundaries, because, you know, they hate judgments, so they hate rules and boundaries. They hate laws and boundaries, so it just decays into corruption and chaos. That's why when a server goes out of control, just fully out of control, they can get into drug addictions and all sorts of just their lives just start going downhill pretty fast. So the server, to kind of stay stable, needs an organizer, a sidekick. You know, they're the Batman or Batwoman, and they need a Robinette. And the Robinette is an organizer who kind of lays and structures things out so that the server can lead or control a controlled kingdom or queendom, shall we say. So that's that's what we mean by matriarchy and matriarchal. And this does not mean that women are the ones in power. It's talking about men who, when men become bound by the server personality, they are like women, even if they're physically men, and they're, quote, heterosexual or whatever, they're acting like women. They become effeminate in a distorted way. So the thing is that that's what happens in a world dominated by the server personality, and passion becomes important, paramount to them. Everything is about passion. That's why, you know, the servers, for example, the literal servers in the food industry, they are kind of taught to have a passion for serving people, a passion for this, a passion for that, a passion for the other. And I've noticed that people who are trapped in that server personality, you know, distorted server personality, tend to use the word passion a lot. They seem to value that more than the truth. And the weird thing is that passion then is taken, when you're in a server dominated personality, that distorts everything. And that's what we have in humanity right now. That's why we have the mess we have. The server personality gone awry and just dominating everything. It's the matriarchy of the server personality, in a sense. But when that distortion comes and distorts everything, the visionary gets distorted too. When the visionary kind of yields or surrenders to the matriarchal pastoral server personality that, you know, is trying to serve and attend to like a shepherd attending to the sheep, when the visionary surrenders to that server personality or embraces it as truth, then it distorts its own drive, because visionary people are very driven. They're driven by a vision, they're driven by a dream, they're driven by a cause, and they're willing to give their lives in sacrifice for that cause. So when they're under that distorted server personality, the visionary starts taking what he has and calls it a passion. But it becomes a passion that's out of control and not limited by rules and boundaries and judgments. And that's why, for example, people who go crazy over abortion, over when, you know, abortion was limited recently, when Roe v. Wade here in America was basically overturned and states were allowed to put limits on abortion, the abortion people just went mad. Like, oh my goodness, we're not going to be able to terminate fetuses anymore. And when they, you know, so... when we go around sleeping around and we have a fetus inside of us, and the fetus is an inconvenience to us, we cannot terminate it, how evil. Oh, and they start getting all angry and agitated. A lot of the, and in many cases, it's people who are not pregnant at the time, but they see it as like a cause to fight for. They are under this the server personality, and the server personality, which hates judgments, doesn't like the judge coming and saying, "Hey, I know it's inconvenient and painful for you to continue with this pregnancy, but if you terminate that fetus, you're terminating a living being." And you're killing. It's like you wouldn't kill a dog just because the dog is an inconvenience. You'd call that a crime. So by the same token, you can't terminate that fetus just because it's inconvenient to you. And that is painful. So the server personnel says, "No, how dare you say that?" And then they say, no, you can terminate the fetus because you want to end your inconvenience and whatever pain this this thing inside of you might be causing in your life. So, you know, go ahead, just terminate it. And they start hating the judge. So, and then when a person has a visionary personality, And buys into the lie that, oh yeah, that's an affront to women and women's rights and blah 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 blah, then they take that passion and take it towards defending that right, quote unquote, and they protest on the streets and do all these things and they do their picket signs and go and instead of partying on weekends, they go and protest in Madison Square Park or whatever, and do all these things because they feel that they're fighting for a cause, and they feel that passion inside of them, and it's a strong passion, and because the server loves passion, then the visionary feels good about that passion, but it's a passion out of control. It's a passion for a cause. The visionary, so that whatever drive, emotional drive that a visionary has for a cause becomes distorted into a low passion that is there out of control, out of control in the sense that it's not bound by the truth and judgments. And then it starts doing things that it's not supposed to do. It starts promoting and fighting for things it's not supposed to fight for, because at the end there's falsehood in it. And we tried to explain before, when we were talking about the right to life, why it is when we start, and that's one of the problems with the Constitution. The Constitution does not protect the right to life. That's why it says absolutely nothing about the fetus. And therefore, that's why, and fundamentalists and conservatives, stupid Christians in America don't understand that. And they still defend that stupid document. But that's another story. The thing is that when we were talking about the right to life, when you start explaining it and drawing it out, if you really believe in that right to life and you start defining the qualities around it, and we went in great detail on what defines life, then you go, wow, clearly a fetus is a living thing. And at the moment you recognize that, and if you recognize the right to life of animals, we talked about that, the Constitution, there's nothing in the Constitution that protects the animals. And you go, oh, who cares about animals? Well, if you don't care about life and defining the concept of life, then don't turn around and defend the fetuses. If you don't think that's important, then you don't understand the right to life. And if you don't understand the right to life, then you have no philosophical or fundamental or metaphysical, whatever you want to call it, or spiritual foundation to support and defend the right to life of fetuses. So either there is a right to life or there isn't. If there is a right to life, you have to understand it fully. And once you understand it fully, you will not only protect human life, you will protect animal life. But the thing is, the moment you start protecting animal life, ironically, even though you think, that's what the leftist tree huggers are always doing, no. If you defend the right to, if you clearly show in the Constitution that you are defending the right to life of all living things, including animals, then clearly that is kind of, you create inadvertently or advertently, whatever, a way to defend the fetus too. Because if you are so, if you can clearly defend a dog from being murdered just because the dog is an inconvenience to the owner, just, you know, like, I don't like feeding him, you know, it's too much trouble to walk him every day. Oh, I can't do that. So, you know, and I have to take him to the vet when he's sick, and oh my goodness, all this trouble. So let me just go out in the backyard and shoot him, just for the heck of it, because it's just a dog. You know, it's an inconvenience to me now. If you're against that, then clearly you can apply all these concepts, and when you apply them to the fetus, you go, my goodness, if you're all so bent on defending a dog from being murdered like that, why are you okay with terminating that living thing that's inside that person? Everybody knows it's a living thing. You know, everybody, when a drunk driver kills a pregnant woman, people will go, oh, okay, the woman died, and she just happened to have an overgrown organ called a fetus inside of her. No, you don't think like that. You always think two people died, the woman and the little fetus inside of her. And we all know that. And we get outraged at the drunk driver because he killed a pregnant woman, and that's when they start saying unborn baby, which is kind of weird. In those contexts, even the liberals start saying unborn baby. So they know, it's like they know in their knowers that that thing is alive and it's a living thing. And they're so passionate, there goes the word, about animal life. They know that they should be passionate about defending that little thing, that fetus thingy inside the pregnant woman. But they know they can't go there because it creates inconveniences. And then the truth, the judgments, become inconvenient, and then they start getting rejected because it caused pain and inconvenience. But what I'm trying to say in all of this is that passion becomes distorted, and one of the places where it sees its greatest corruption is in visionaries. When they're under the server personality, the visionary takes his passion or her passion and starts using it to fight very passionately, there goes the word again, against the truth. And they become kamikaze soldiers in the army of falsehood, and very lethal and deadly evil forces to defend falsehood against the truth. And a lot of people who have this visionary personality get wasted. Because instead of taking that visionary drive in them towards fighting for truth, they end up giving their lives for horrible causes. And that's what happens to a lot of people in Hollywood. A lot of people in Hollywood have a combination of the server and visionary personality. For some reason, those two need to usually go together a lot in people who succeed as actors and actresses. You need kind of both of them in some ways. And because of that, you know, then they start, you know, doing all this thing. I need to fight for something. I need to give my life for a cause. And they start looking, I'm going to fight for animals and defend animals from being killed. And I'm going to fight for fetuses being killed at will to protect the rights of women to choose to terminate fetuses. And I'm going to fight to save the whales, and I'm going to end global warming. And oh yes, global warming, we're dying. And, you know, so they start, and they are passionate. And there goes the word again about it. They're just living for that. That's what they give their lives for. So whenever you hear the word passion, and someone is using the word passionate a lot, you know, that's like not necessarily wrong, but that's like. Alarm bells should go off in your head, ding, 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 that, oh my goodness, I'm in the presence of a person with a distorted server personality, or who is under that influence, the macabre influence of a distorted server personality. And that's what and people with that distorted server personality become very contaminated because they're no longer, it's like a person who is always hanging around with people who have diseases. So because they have no boundaries anymore, and the contagious diseases are kind of in a way a manifestation of that server personality, because they believe in they are very bent on communion between people. They love fellowshipping, and that's another code word. When you see people who use the word fellowshipping, especially in Christian circles, those are the, you know, the Christians, quote unquote, who are trapped under this canopy of the distorted server personality. You know, it's like everything is about communion, and that's why social media has taken off so much, and why it's such a corrupting influence, because it is promoted by and it promotes the distorted server personality of communion, fellowship with other people. That's so important to them, and that's what leads to corruption, and because there's so much emphasis on communion with others, and there are no boundaries anymore. Then you start communing with people who are contaminated, and that's when you get a contagion of bad influences from other people. That's why people who have strong server personalities start interacting with other people who are, let's say, addicted to drugs, and they start going into drugs themselves, or who are alcoholics, and they start becoming alcoholics themselves. And then by the same token, they start sleeping around, and they start getting a lot of contagious transmitted diseases. So they are very contaminated because they don't have boundaries. So they start just relating with people who have a disease and start getting contagions from other people. So they're contaminated. And that's what I saw in this young man. The first time I saw him in a video when he was collapsing on the football field, I didn't know about him, didn't know him from Adam, or anyone. Because I don't follow American football or basically any sport anymore, unfortunately, because it's all contaminated. But when I saw him in that video, I saw filth around him. I don't know how to explain it. I just saw this like mantle of contamination on him, like he was filthy. And then I was kind of surprised when I heard all these good stories about him, like he's such a good kid, and he does a lot of community work, and he's a Christian, and that's supposed to make him a good person, and all that and the other. But that's what he is. He's a contaminated person under the server personality. And then he submits his God to the passions that he holds dear to please others. So God becomes molded by his passions instead of his passions being molded by God, if you get what I'm saying, by his God. So he might as well, in many ways, not even believe in God, in his God. What's the point when his God becomes like a second fiddle to his passions that are inspired and by others and driven to please others and not his God? And that's why he didn't speak. That thing about him taking a long time to think about it, and that's why he stayed away from the spotlight, is kind of like, I don't know, there's something iffy about it. But it also highlights that maybe the guy had a conflict in his mind, like, why did this happen? I'm doing all this good work. Why did God allow this to happen to me? And that's why his reasoning was, oh, he must have done it so that he could highlight to the world his passion. Imagine that, how self-serving, you know, his God allowed it to happen so that everybody could see how passionate Hamlin is and inspire others to go serve and help kids, you know. But he didn't process the thing all the way through. And he was so concerned about why it happened to him, why he had this pain. Remember, the servers are anti-pain. They hate anything that causes pain. So while he was in the midst of understanding why he was going through all this pain, he forgot about, okay, is God telling me something here? Did God allow this because there might be something I did wrong? They don't go there. They never go there. So, and it's very clear to everybody else who has been, you know, watching from a distance or from without being just easily swayed by the passions of the crowd, that this son of a bitch collapsed on the field because he had a he clearly was, you know, was injected. You know, he was mRNA injected. He was raped by injection, and gladly so, I would say. And that's why he collapsed on the field. That's why we're hearing all these people, you know, dying suddenly. We all know, or at least the people who are paying attention, who were paying attention from the beginning, know that. And he didn't go there. So he went through all of this, and he didn't learn a damn thing. He didn't learn a single thing. He came out as stupid as when he started. Maybe now he's even worse. Because he went through the experience and didn't learn a single thing. So now he's hardened to the truth. So so Hamlin was this inspiration to all these conservative Christians. Like, oh yes, like they, as we shared before, there was this article on this conservative website where they were talking about how Hamlin brought us together to pray. And there was even a fellow at ESPN who kind of risked his job in the middle of a, not on ESPN, I'm sorry, on the NFL Network, in the middle of a sports show. He started praying. He bowed his head and started praying for Hamlin. And, you know, he didn't get fired, amazingly, because there was this rally around Hamlin, and it suddenly became okay to pray to God in public. And conservative Christians were seeing this as a wonderful thing and blah, 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 blah. And no, it's just fluff. It's just nonsense. It doesn't mean anything. So it's this manifestation of how we will have these moments where things seem to be getting better, that America is coming back from its stupidity, but it's really not. It's all just smoke and mirrors. It's just illusions. And that's what Hamlin's statement manifested. And just by contrast, I want to mention this. I don't follow, as I've shared before, I don't follow American football anymore, which was my favorite sport. And number two was regular football. But I don't follow either anymore, especially American football, which is kind of painful on Sundays when it's football season, because I wish I could be watching games, but I don't, because it all started way before the virus stuff. It's a long story. I started boycotting them. And then it's as if whenever I wanted to return and end the boycott, they started doing things to kind of force me out again. So now I'm permanently out. But I was curious to know who was going to go to the Super Bowl this year. And I knew last Sunday that they were playing the what would be the equivalent in, you know, in football terms of the semifinals to get to the final Super Bowl. So I didn't watch the games at all, but I was just curious to watch the score. And I turned the television to one of the games, and I saw that Philadelphia had beaten San Francisco 31-7. And I saw this black quarterback going around the field, like celebrating black Philadelphia Eagles quarterback. And I didn't even know he was black, or, you know, that they had a black quarterback or whatever. But I saw him and I knew he was the quarterback. I don't know why, because the game had ended, but I knew he was the quarterback. Don't tell me why. Maybe I saw it in some sort of something that was written at the bottom of the screen. I don't think so, but I knew he was the quarterback. And he was around, going around, even you know, shaking hands with, high fiving fans around the edges of this of the field, and he was happy, and I could see the score 31-7. Okay, and then later on, they I forget which came first, but then I also saw the end, the very end. I switched by coincidence to the tail end of the game between Kansas City and Cincinnati, and in Kansas City, they were tied 20-20, and Kansas City was able to drive and hit a 45, I think, yard field goal. And the field goal barely made it through the goalposts, and with, you know, a few seconds left, and they ended up winning. I think it was 23-20. And then I saw the Kansas City quarterback, which I knew was black, Patrick Mahomes. He went on the field, you know, at the end of the game, and he was happy. And the first thing he did as he stepped into the field, at the end of the game to, you know, to celebrate, was they had the camera on him, and he raised his eyes towards the sky and pointed up at the sky as he was looking at the sky. And clearly he was thanking his God for what had happened. And I know that this guy is a Christian, so that didn't surprise me. And I was like, waiting to see how he reacted. That's the first thing he did. And then he was immediately interviewed because he's very popular, especially because he's a black quarterback, very successful in that. Almost always automatically makes you very popular with the media. But he's a good quarterback. He just happens to be black. But the thing is that he was interviewed by this lady, and the first thing that he said when the microphone was put in front of his face, he said, "First of all, I want to thank God because he healed my body." And then he went on, to say other things and answer another question, I forget. But the thing is that that was the very first thing that came out of his mouth. I want to thank God for this, and I want to thank God for healing my body. And I didn't realize that he had been sick, and apparently he had been sick prior to the game, and apparently he was questionable for the game, how well he would be to play, and he was able to play and play well enough to help the team win. So I saw the contrast. It was like immediately this young black quarterback, first thing out of his mouth, first reaction. If he wasn't like focused on, okay, the camera's on me, I'm going to do this. His natural reaction when he stepped on the field was to raise his eyes to the heavens and point to the sky and give glory and honor to his God. And the first thing he said when he was interviewed was, "I want to thank God and God for healing my body." And I said, what an interesting thing. I don't know how bad he must have been ill. And if you believe in his God, then you will clearly say, okay, yeah, he was healed. But whatever ailment he had, I don't think it compares to what happened to Hamlin. Hamlin came out of, he was basically brain dead and could have been brain dead for 7 minutes or so. And he came back to life. And you see the contrast. And both would have reason to be grateful. I'm not saying that Mahomes doesn't, Kansas City quarterback was wrong in thanking his God. No, on the contrary, if he believes in his God, he should be thankful to him. But the thing is that you see that this guy who received this healing from his God was grateful for this, and this other guy who received this big healing had absolutely no gratitude or very little gratitude to his God. He was more grateful to his fans and his supporters than to his God. So you see the contrast. And I felt that happened as a way to contrast it. And then the other thing was that the other quarterback from the Eagles, who was also black, and his name is Jalen Hurts. I'd never heard of him. I didn't know him from Adam, but apparently he's well known and has succeeded. And he said recently he put out a tweet or something, and I know it because I saw it in the conservative website, the headline. Sometimes they have sport headlines in the middle of political news and stuff. And the link mentioned that he had tweeted or said something in somewhere where he quoted his favorite passage, John 13:7, which says something about Jesus saying to his disciples, "What I'm doing right now you don't understand, but you will understand it later." And that is his favorite verse in the Bible. So he was openly saying, you know, I believe in the Bible, I believe in God, and I believe that His Word guides my life. It's a person who has, at least on the surface, believes in this idea that there's a truth, and he is to follow the truth. You know, whatever the truth may be, you know, he's trying to follow it, and lead, have his life led by it. And he said that has helped him because there have been moments where he doesn't understand why things have happened, but he knows that he will eventually understand. Like, he's waiting for understanding. Like this Hamlin guy, he doesn't know what happened, and he didn't even get the message. You stupid idiot! I just saved your life from dying from that stupid injection that I was trying to warn you not to take. But you took it anyway because you like to please people, and you know that was you knew that was the popular thing to do. That's why you did it, and you didn't listen to me. You listened to the people. You wanted to please people, and you took that stupid injection, and you almost got killed. And I gave you a second chance. That's what, as if God was saying that to him, and he didn't get it, and he still doesn't get it, and he will never understand it. He will never get it. The stupid idiot, son of a bitch. And when I say son of a bitch, you may think, oh, he's just being vulgar or disrespectful. No. Bitch is a female dog. The dog is tied to the personality of being a server. A person, you know, that's why dogs like to please people. You know, that's their personality. And there's nothing wrong. I love dogs, by the way. I love dogs. But the problem is when you as a person become a dog, that's when the problem starts, and especially a female dog. As we said, the server personality is female. So when I say son of a bitch, I'm not just using the term in this just kind of vulgar way. I'm saying it with a purpose. All these words that I use that seem rough and vulgar sometimes, they are said with a very clear and specific purpose. So when I call him son of a bitch, that's what I'm saying. He is the product of a server personality that's been distorted, where people become dogs, where they're trying to please others and please themselves constantly. So this son of a bitch, and that's what he is, in every sense of the word. He's a son of a bitch. When he collapsed, he didn't understand that it was like a wake-up call for him he was first being punished for his stupidity, and it was a wake-up call for him to then warn others, just like black people. As we've said before, black people have a calling to be on the watchtower. That's part of their DNA, as a people, and they have not lived up to it. So instead of going up in the watchtower and saying to other people, hey, you know, watch out, there's this injection is deadly and kills you, and it's not only the injection but everything that comes with it, the everything that comes with that, because it's more than just the injection. When you yield to the injection, you yield to a whole bunch of things, not just the injection. If you get my meaning, you're surrendering yourself to a whole bunch of things, and you're becoming a slave to the passions of other people in such a profound way. It's not just the injection. You lose more than your health when you yield to the injection. And he should have been on the watchtower. Now it's like, I came back from the dead, y'all. You should listen to me. That injection is deadly, and everything that comes with that injection, all the things, all the messages that come with that injection, are killing our people, and it needs to stop. And he should be warning those kids that he's serving all the time. He should, if he really wanted to serve them and help them, one of the things he would be doing is telling them not to take the injection, and use himself as an example. You know, just like people who recover from alcoholism and go around telling other people not to drink because of what happened, and they go on to describe how their lives were destroyed by alcohol. That's what you should be doing regarding the injection. And then, not just the injection, but a whole bunch of things. But instead of that, he kept embracing it. That's why he kept wearing the stupid mask in hospital. When he took the picture, he didn't even bother to just lower his mask. I don't know, maybe you could say, oh, the hospital is forcing them to wear the mask and the stuff, but why are the parents wearing masks? He was not there because of a virus infection. He was there because his heart gave out. So why were the parents, stupid parents, wearing masks to begin with, why was he wearing a mask? If he was having problems breathing too, because that was another thing he was having, he couldn't breathe. So if he was having problems breathing, why did he put on a mask to make it more difficult to breathe? Idiot. But the thing is, instead of recognizing the truth, he embraced the falsehood even more. And interestingly enough, this week I heard the story of two. It is so curious. Two young black kids who I don't know if they, I think one of them collapsed and had a very serious heart attack. Like a 23-year-old, he was just jogging or doing something, and then he collapsed. A young athlete, and he had a very severe cardiac arrest. And I don't think he died, but he was in pretty bad shape. Just suddenly, he was healthy, and then suddenly he just collapsed. And there was another young kid, I think it was, I forget his age, but he must have been a high school kid, an athlete, another athlete, young black kid, who collapsed on the field and had severe cardiac arrest. And I think he did survive. But so there was this young teenager and young adult, 23 years old. I think Hamlin is 24. I could be wrong, but he's very young. So this other young black kid who was an athlete too, was almost Hamlin's age, and he almost died. And it's interesting, in this week, I saw this headline about these two black kids, and I know it's not a coincidence. It's as if the God who healed Hamlin was saying, hey, I gave this guy a second chance so that he could go, if he cares so much about black kids in the neighborhood, then this is his opportunity to go help those black kids and tell them and warn them about not taking the injection. So if he really wanted to help black kids, that's what he would be doing, because that's what's killing them off. And I don't know why I have this feeling. That could be wrong, because I don't have any medical or data to support this. But I have this very strange impression that the injection is more lethal to black people than it is to other people. Maybe there's something about it, or maybe the genetic makeup of black people, I don't know. And I think black people have kind of stayed away from the injection a little more than white people, because white people are more like sheep sometimes. They just, oh, they want to follow. This is what's the orderly thing to do. This is, let's keep us safe and stay safe and blah, blah, blah. And so they go and do it. And black people are not as prone to obeying rules like that as easily. But the ones who do go ahead and take it because of, might as well, it's just a shot, and then I can work at this place or do this or do the other, and all these inconveniences go away. Just like abortion, you kill the fetus to end the inconvenience, of a 9-month pregnancy, then giving birth, and then having to support the kid or either give him or her up in adoption for adoption, all that stuff, a year of my life that I'll have to sacrifice just to let this thing live, but so some of them, because of the inconvenience, do go ahead and take the injection. And I believe that with them, for some reason, maybe their diet, their DNA makeup, I don't know what it is, it's more lethal for them. And I think it also has to do with many of them being athletic. I think being athletic helps the spike proteins to get spread more easily throughout the body, because your body, you're running, you're doing things, your heart is pumping, your blood is circulating with much more force if you're an athletic person. And I think that also has an effect. And I think also there might be an issue with the muscle fat proportion. I don't know. And maybe if you're more muscular, more athletic, it can penetrate some tissues more easily. I don't know. It's just an impression I have that black people are more at risk of dying from this being severely affected by the injection than even white people. It's a deadly injection. It does nothing but harm. It does no good whatsoever. It doesn't protect you from any disease. It actually lowers your immune system. It makes you more susceptible to disease. That's why a lot of people, after they get the injection, they end up having the virus that they were supposedly injected for. And then they are their own head to justify their stupidity. They go, oh, it just the injection made the disease less powerful. My symptoms were less damaging because I had taken the injection. No, you had the disease, you had the symptoms because your immune system is down. Why didn't you have the disease when there was the so-called outbreak? When the deadly virus was out there and there was no injection, you didn't get the disease. Now you take the injection and now you get it. You know, how come when everybody else is injected, so the virus should be dead and have disappeared, but no. But you know, it's just this thing where your passions start driving the truth, where you start to justify things in your head and adjust reality to what your passions say, instead of letting your passions be molded by the truth. So that's what I wanted to say about Hamlin. I thought it was going to be like a 5-minute thing, but took a little longer. And now I'm going to quickly talk about McCarthy, Mike McCarthy, the other son of a bitch, who is the Speaker of the House. And a lot of conservatives saw it as they didn't want McCarthy, but they saw it as a victory that Matt Gaetz and some other people, conservatives in the House, Republicans in the House, kind of forced McCarthy to accept a whole certain bunch of terms before voting for him. And again, in the midst of all of that, no one said it, stopped and said, okay, why do we need a Speaker of the House? Why do we need a person? We went through this before, so I'm not going to go through it in great detail again. But you know, no one, just like Hamlin, went through this whole thing and didn't wake up and say, well, I've been hearing about this injection that there might be a link between it and cardiac arrest, myocarditis, and all these things. And could it be that that's what happened to me? But he didn't want to go there because the moment he embraced that truth, he would become unpopular. And he'd become the crazy, crazy right-winger. And he would lose his popularity. And he couldn't go for that. No can do. In the same way, in the midst of all this voting for McCarthy and all this power play and why it was so important for McCarthy to be or not be the House Speaker of the House, no one stood back and said, okay, what is this Speaker of the House that you speak of? You know, what is that this thing about? Why does it exist? Why do we have to have a Speaker of the House? Why? What does the Speaker of the House do? Why does he have so much power? Why is it so important? Who is the Speaker of the House? No one stood back, especially conservatives, because you know they don't want to go there because they know that the Speaker of the House was instituted by the Founding Fathers, and anything the Founding Fathers did was good, and anyone who criticizes anything done by the Founding Fathers is evil and of the devil. And therefore, if you criticize the Speaker of the House, you're criticizing the Founding Fathers, and if you're criticizing the Founding Fathers, you are of Satan. So they don't want to go there. But as we've explained before, that's a stupid office that was instituted, and the reason why it's so important is because they start controlling the Speaker of the House starts controlling a whole bunch of things that the Founding Fathers allowed. As we explained before, the Constitution allows the Congress to define their own rules. It's like as we've said before, it's like a sport where the players are allowed to define their own rules on how to play the game. And so the party that's in control starts defining the rules in whichever way they please. And it's allowed by the stupid Founding Fathers. So the thing is that and that also starts opening the door for the committee system, which is very corrupt. And then, because in the committee system, then the people who please the party elites get assigned to posts as committee chair persons, and they start controlling what bills can make it to the floor, what bills cannot, and do all these horrible things. And then they start having this power, and then lobbyists come and say, if you support this bill in your committee, if you reject this bill in your committee, then we will help you with a donation and all this power play that starts going on. So these power clots, as we've tried to describe before. But none of that was became obvious in the midst of that, and it was seen as a victory that McCarthy conceded to all these things, and now he started appointing conservatives to committee chairmanships and kicking out this these radical leftists from certain committees. And no one goes, why are there committees to begin with? What do these committees accomplish? No one goes there. It's like, oh, we're having these victories. So this illusion that we're having victory and that things are good, but there really aren't. And what I wanted to get to was the statement that McCarthy made a few days ago. He, for some stupid reason, this son of a bitch, worthless bastard boy, who will probably burn in hell the day that he dies, worthless son of a bitch, he's an animal. He's evil, and there's an effeminate quality. He has this effeminate, weak quality to him, but he's evil and cunning like a fox behind the scenes. He's treacherous. He's disgusting. This Republican Mike McCarthy. So the thing is that he said in a statement recently. A couple of days ago, I think, for some reason, he was speaking about what happened on January 6th, you know, the famous incident in Washington in 2021 with the people who were protesting against the stolen election. And he said that the police officer who murdered Ashlyn Babbitt was doing his job. And he said it just like that. The police officer... a Capitol Police officer who murdered Ashley Babbitt for no reason at all. He was just doing his job. And I said to myself, there you go. You know, you were so happy that this guy was elected Speaker of the House under all these terms and conditions. But at the end of the day, he's going to do what he's going to do. He made a point, may yield to Matt Gaetz and appoint a person here, appoint a person there, and do all these surface things that have to do with power play. Obviously, he's a Republican. He wants Republicans controlling committees because that's what the party wants. That's why they fight so hard to win the House so that they can then run the show and run the rules and set up the committees and have power play and then have lobbyists depend on the Republican Party to get things done. And that's why the donations come in. You know, it's all power play, and so he's not yielding to principle. So once he does all the surface power play thing and satisfies the conservatives, then he shows his true self, and you know, so that's an example of, again, things looking okay, like there is a victory, that the country's being restored, but it's all just illusion, and this McCarthy is more interested in pleasing people than in following the truth. He's also that type of person who wants to look good to the Democrats. He doesn't want to look radical. This Marjorie Taylor Greene, who supported him too, who is from Georgia, and she's also supporting Trump. This Marjorie Taylor Greene also said, and I think we shared this before, that she is she believes Biden won the election fair and square. So how can she support Trump and at the same time say that when Trump is all constantly saying that Biden stole the election? You know, so these people who, and she sounds so boisterous and like she is fighting for the causes. And we talked about, you know, the difference between true fighters and false fighters. And she's a false fighter. She just fights, but it's all on the surface. At the end of the day, she is corrupted. And just like this guy, he's corrupted deep inside, and he's just interested in pleasing people, and he wants to get along with the Democrats. He doesn't want to look like a right winger, a radical, so he goes ahead and says things to make the Democrats feel good. Because he in the back, behind closed doors, he is trying to cooperate with the Democrats, because he knows that the Democrats at the end of the day run the show in Washington. And he wants to be nice with them, to please them, and so that he will be pleased by them. You know, he wants to serve them, and if he needs to serve, you know, someone's head on a silver platter to please the Democrats, he will do it in a heartbeat. And that's why this another son of a bitch, idiot Trump, is an idiot for supporting him. He supported him for a speaker and tried to lobby the Republicans to vote for him as speaker. And this McCarthy guy kept betraying Trump over and over again, and he will betray Trump again. But Trump saw it as part of the power play. I want to be part of the system, and I want to play along, and I have to work within the system to change the system, which is, at the end of the day, nonsense, because they people who think like that never change the system. They end up being part of the system they work with to change it, supposedly. McCarthy will have Trump's plate on a head on a silver platter the next time he needs to please people in positions of power. So that's what America has, a snake, as a people-pleasing, treacherous snake as Speaker of the House. So Hamlin and McCarthy came out with two statements, and they both emphasized this, the problem with the people who live to serve, who are passionate about things that are not bound by the truth, who seem to believe one thing and on the surface seem to be right, but in reality are more inclined to please others than to please the truth, because pleasing the truth is painful, can be very painful. And they rather be popular and loved than really help the people whom they claim to want to help. And so that's what we wanted to say about those two. And so now I guess we won't be talking about the annexation of Santo Domingo, which we've been promising for forever and ever, but I believe it was important to talk about all of this. Interesting, one of the persons was black and the other person was Irish. When I think of McCarthy, it might be a Scottish name, but for some reason I think of them as Irish. And the black and the Irish had roles to play in the American fabric, in the American society and framework. But they both failed radically. There's something about the Irish when they go wrong. There's a when you analyze them, it's kind of, we've done that on the website where these audio clips are posted. But when you analyze the Irish makeup of the underlying makeup of the Irish race, there's unfortunately a very treacherous side to them. There's a side of treason. And that's why a lot of the people who have betrayed Trump are of have an Irish surname. The people who seem to please him, in his face, and then who stab him in the back, Brutus style, they tend to be Irish or of Celtic descent. Maybe that's rather than say Irish necessarily, it's more a Celtic thing, and that obviously includes Scotland's, shall we say, to a great extent. Black people, did not fulfill their duty. I forget the term for it. When you're derelict to your duty, this is what black people did. They were supposed to be in the watchtower telling people, warning people about things, and they didn't do it. Just like this Hamlin, instead of warning people about the injection, after what happened to him, he's just going back to his stupidity. And then we have this Celtic person of Celtic descent who is clearly a traitor and who takes the opportunity to betray the truth whenever he can and whenever it pleases him and helps him to please other people. And both groups, the black people and the Celtic people, had a lot to do with the fall of this country. Black people, because of their dereliction of duty, Celtic people because of their betrayal. The Celtic people have a strong connection with things that are transcendent. And Celtic people could have had been a strong influence in helping to wake us up to the need to a fundamental transformation of the country at a deeper, more philosophical, higher level. It's like they could have woken up the people to this need to enter into a new dimension, that we need to rewrite the Constitution, rewrite our entire political system, our society, and everything around us. They could have been very good at that and brought the vision to the country in a transcendent, more high-level way. I don't know how to explain that. And they didn't do it. And instead of doing that, they turned into evil traitors. And I'm not saying every person who was Celtic is a traitor. I'm saying that there is a pattern in the Celtic race, that there's a side of it that is open to treachery, unfortunately. But obviously that doesn't mean that every Celtic person is a traitor. Please don't understand that. But there's a pattern there of treachery. That there's like an influence of treachery that lurks within the Celtic people, or the Celtic influence. I guess we will talk about the annexation of Santo Domingo in a different audio clip. Hopefully it will be the next one. And we want to get to explaining what happened after during the second term of Ulysses Grant, and see how the Republican Party began to decay. I think we have kind of talked about that a little bit, how the Republican Party went from being born as the party that defended black people to the party who apparently couldn't care less about black people. Even though when Republicans are in control, black people are better off, but we went through that before in the previous audio clip. But the Republicans have kind of also stepped away from that duty that they had, that they were born with, and that has also contributed to the whole decay of things, because black people got swayed by the Democrats, by the evil Democrats, and then they didn't do what they were supposed to do, and it just contributed to all this sequence of events that has led to the death of the country in less than 8 months. We have very little time left before this country's over. Just so you know that the country's over, the signs, the true signs that the country is done. I don't know if I'm sure you've heard of this stupid balloon, a Chinese balloon that was floating over. It's been in American airspace. It's this huge Chinese spy balloon floating over American airspace. And they haven't shot it down, and Bite Me doesn't want to shoot it down or do anything about it. And it's just going through the U.S. And the Chinese have claimed, oh, it's a weather balloon that just got out of control and we can't control it anymore. Oh, yeah, right. And by coincidence, it just happened to go over a military site where we have our nuclear missile launch site in Montana. And is headed for one in North Dakota. You know, what a coincidence, the exact path to go through military, installations like that. Wow, what a coincidence. But it's just a weather balloon that's, just following the wind. Yeah, right, of course. And I think they've seen one in Canada, and there's a report of one that was seen in Latin America. And these are literally... I don't know. I think they're more than this, but at one level, they are literally trial balloons. That's what they are. And the Chinese are saying, hey, you know, let's see, now America is no more. There's like no boundaries anymore. The illegals are just flooding through the South. And even now I've heard that a lot of them are also coming in through the North, because the northern border is even less secure than the southern border, because there had never been a need to even bother securing the border with Canada. But now they are coming in through the North and through the South. It's just flooding in. And I've said it before. I feel like I see Hispanics all over the place now. It's like I see them everywhere. And I don't know where they've come from, but I just see them everywhere when I hadn't seen them like this before. So they are just flooding in. And now there are no borders. And now the balloons don't even care that this is sovereign airspace, American airspace, that just come in, the Chinese. And some people have even argued, you know, these balloons could have be dropping, you know, biochemical viruses, or, you know, warfare, like dropping viruses on the ground to kind of start spreading diseases. Who knows? I mean, what the hell these things are doing, nobody knows, especially with the Chinese communists. And no one is, it's just going through, and it's just a sign the country's done. There is no country. There's no America anymore. And there's even a comment, or a news story that the Montana governor said, well, they say that no explosions occurred around Billings, Montana, but some people did say that they were seeing explosions in the air where the balloons had been, and they even have videos of it, but the Montana governor is saying that there were no explosions. Maybe there were, maybe there weren't. But the fact that we have to even talk about this, you know, because they have videos of a trail of smoke in the sky, you know, where the balloon was spotted, all the strange stuff that's going on. And but the thing is that we shouldn't even have to talk about this, because there should be no balloon going through the U.S., it's just a sign that there is no nation, there's no sovereignty, the nation is gone, it's being overrun by the third world, and the leader of the third world in the world is China. I don't know if technically they are part of the third world, because there's a technical definition of what is first world, second world, and third world. I think they are third world, but and they are the most evil force of the third world in the world. Hispanics are evil, the most evil force in terms of their cultural influence, the evil as the cultural influence, and the Chinese are the most evil in terms of literal military and power, and they're just flooding into the country, and it's saying, hey, you know, you the third world has come to America, and it's not going to be driven out. And in less than 8 months, we'll be dead, and this country will be no more. And as I've said before, I've given up on any hope of any change, because people don't want to change here. Conservatives want to stay that way, the way they are, loving and worshiping and pleasuring themselves with the Constitution. And they don't want to get off their idolatry and listen to the truth. Just like this idiot Hamblin, after all that he's been through, just like we went through this hell with the virus and all this nonsense, and we came out the same, and maybe not the same, not just the same, but worse, more determined to be stupid. And Hamblin, in a sense, is a figure of America, the conservatives, and how they have, basically decided that they will not listen to the truth and change and do what needs to be done to rescue this nation. And those, the few of us who are speaking the truth, will just remain a few of us, and the country will die, and there will be no restoration. So thank you very much for listening.